How much goodwill has Ryan Day really bought himself? Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Perl, you think a lot, right?
And
they won the national championship last year. Amazing run to win the title for Ohio State. They were a juggernaut of a team that, you know, had really struggled at times during the regular season. They were playing on a razor's edge. They lost that game to Michigan. Things looked devastating. Ryan Day's getting death threats. I mean, things got really serious and pretty ugly. And then this magical run through the college football playoff, the first year it ever got expanded to 12 teams in this new format, and they played great. They took advantage of their opportunity, and they won it all. Now, Big Ten Media Days are starting today, so Ryan Day is going to be at the podium. Has this now lessened some of the, I don't know, like fervor about not beating Michigan, where Ryan Day has a 1-4 record against the Wolverines because he was able to deliver a national title last year?
Definitely. And this is a problem with the 12-team playoff. It eventually, and might not be immediately, waters down the regular season, and that includes the rivalries. I do remember when they expanded to 12, I think it was our buddy Ross Tucker, football analyst, who said, this is going to hurt Ohio State-Michigan. Because really, Ohio State-Michigan, to me, and we argue about this, it's the only massively relevant rivalry left. North Carolina Duke died because the tournament expanded so much, and North Carolina and Duke decided to judge themselves on their postseasons. I think that this is going to water down that rivalry. But see, reality is Ryan Day's a champion. If he loses to Michigan, who cares? I mean, yes, of course they care, but they live to beat Michigan, but it's definitely not going to affect his job status.
So did you think that the day that Ohio State lost to Michigan?
I thought he was in big trouble, of course.
Okay, right. So he had to win the national title.
And he did.
But how much glow and how long can you live off that national title? You would think you could live for a while off of that.
Or you could coast
for a while off. I'm not saying coast. He's definitely not mailing anything in. But you could definitely, you know, kind of bask in the glow of your national title, and you would have a job for at least a couple of years. That doesn't happen in coaching all the time. Ed Orgeron, who was a lot, he was a handful. He was gone after LSU won a national title. Gene Chizik, who was not Ryan Day, did not have the cachet coaching acumen. He was gone after Auburn won a national title. In the NFL, this happens all the time. And quite frankly, college football is becoming a lot more like the NFL. It happened with your team, the Philadelphia Eagles. Doug Peterson beats Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, shown the door. The coaches sometimes don't get the amount of grace that we think. Now, some coaches can live off one title forever, and I'm not saying Ryan Day may only win one, but if he goes 1-5, if they lose to Michigan again, I think you're going to see those same type of feelings drummed up, and I think this fan base is waiting to turn on this dude. I don't know why. I think he's a good coach. I thought it before he won a national title. I didn't understand what the rush was to run him out of town. But I'm not a diehard fan of Ohio State, so I'm going to let those fans have that opinion, have their feeling. They're welcome to have it. I think they're waiting to turn on him. And losing again to Michigan, which is totally within the realm, I think you will start to see the get Ryan Day out of here from a, vocal, even if it's a vocal minority.
I'd be shocked if that happened. First of all, they definitely could lose to Michigan this year. Michigan's probably better than they were last year. But Ryan Day, I'm looking, he's 70-10 as a coach, 3 playoff appearances. Where on earth would you get a better coach than Ryan Day? Who would you hire? Unless Nick Saban is coming out of retirement for Ohio State, which is definitely not happening, then what strategy would you have? Ryan Day is one of the best offensive coaches, is obviously next level at recruiting, even in this NIL world. So the odds are like, I can't even imagine. Like, if they lost to Michigan, who are you bringing in? Either maybe Jim Harbaugh. I have no idea how you could possibly top Ryan Day. Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, there's an impossible, like, they're lucky. I bet you they feel kind of lucky to have him because he just keeps on bringing these incredible superstars to the program.
But that's not how everyone felt a couple months ago. There was a list of candidates to replace him, you know, after they lost to Michigan.
But a lot of insiders were like, internally, they don't view Ryan Day that way. They're psyched that he's keeping the program going.
Keeping the program going. It's Ohio State. The program's going to keep going.
Ohio State, before Tressel, like, there's a lot of down years for Ohio State. Wasn't Ohio State.
Okay, but think about now since Tressel, who was, I believe, a perfect 9-0 against Michigan? Was he not? You can double check me there.
Michigan stunk too. I mean,
I'm just saying that the last couple coaches that he's going to be compared to, Tressel, Urban Meyer, destroyed Michigan. And Ryan Day's got a 1-4 record against Michigan. I think, you know, I would like to think that a national championship and being a good coach would buy you a lot of good graces with the fan base. I just have seen it happen with this guy. You mentioned the gaudy regular season record. The fans don't care about that. They expect that.
Well, yeah, but I think it's a little harder these days. Like, I think fans in Columbus are really smart. They know winning a national title now is definitely harder than it was. There's just no doubt about it. There's so much more parity in the sport. And the guy got... He got Jeremiah Smith to come to Ohio State. Like, that doesn't earn him something?
Jeremiah Smith to come to Ohio State.
Everybody, you don't think everybody was offering Jeremiah Smith money?
So, I'm sorry, Jim Tressel was 9-1, so apologies. He was 9-1 against Michigan, and Urban Meyer was perfect against Michigan when he was the coach, and that's who Ryan Day is being compared to. The two most recent guys, we're not going to count. I think Luke Fickell was an interim. The one thing about this, though, is you're saying it's harder than ever to win a college football playoff.
Yeah.
Or to win a championship. You may be right because there's more games, but if it hadn't been for the 12-team expansion last year and it was only four, Ohio State's not sniffing a shot at the postseason, and Ryan Day never has a chance to make up for that loss to Michigan where their team played terribly that day, and he may be gone. So in some ways, having... a air quotes harder path ended up saving his bacon. They got saved there.
Well, I mean, think about Ohio State's win in 2014. What happened there? They expanded to four. That's the only reason Ohio State got in and Urban won the title. Nobody thinks back on Urban Meyer's first title as in Ohio State as flawed, do they?
No. I'm just saying that you say it's harder, but it actually saved him. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that because, you know, is it harder because, you had to play more games, but it was
incredibly
hard to make the four.
No, I just think you can't stash talent like you did in 2015 or 2000. What year was Tressel? Even way before that.
Like 2000. Tressel was 2001, I believe, to 2000.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they played an amazing Miami team, but even they had about 14 star NFL players. I just think it's way harder to win a title now. I think you're going to see a bunch of different champions, and I think Ryan Day is going to live off that for a long time. Also, again, show me a better plan. And even Ohio State, they're rational to some extent. To some extent. Not totally. But what would you replace Ryan Day with? Like, I think he'd get scooped up immediately.
That's not the point. The point isn't where he would go next. This is the point of, do the Ohio State fans still want him? And up until a couple months ago and after that Michigan loss, they didn't. And I don't think anyone really would have been crying. They would have said, listen, you know, you won against Michigan the first year, and that was with Urban's guys. And now you haven't been able to beat them in three different tries. He's 1-4 now against Michigan. And even though they won the national title, if they lose to Michigan this year, which the game's in the Big House, and this is going to be tough, I think you start hearing rumblings from that fan base again because I think they're waiting to turn on them.
Yeah, I think you're ignoring the new reality of the 12-team playoff. It's just watered down the thing. By the way, like, also, how are you going to... I know the money is part of it, but how... You have this pipeline to these amazing offensive players, and everybody can pay these guys, but people want to go to this system and play at this school. And also, you might have revenue sharing, which will cut down the ability to spend. But look at their talent. It's unbelievable, especially on offense, what they've done. Unfortunately, I don't know who the quarterback is really going
to
be.
You know, and they are not bringing a quarterback to media days. So Julian Sayin is, we thought, was going to be the no-doubt starter. But
kind of. Even no doubt. We've never seen him. So there's definitely some doubt.
Well, he was the five-star who was coming in, and he was kind of had the inside track, as that's what people thought, to be the starter, and then didn't have a great spring game. So now Lincoln Kineholtz is right there with him, and neither guy is at media day.
Yeah, but just to be clear, though, it was not Arch Manning where everybody was waiting for Julian Sayin. It was like, okay, maybe he's ready. He's 19. So anyway, but... back to 12-team playoff, Meg, it's just different. I think the playoff is more important. I hate to say this. Like, even if he loses to Michigan this year, he's going to be in the playoff. And are you going to bet against Ohio State when they're playing one of EJ's ACC teams? They're still going to be a huge factor.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We're asking you the question, how much pressure is still on Ryan Day to beat Michigan when you are coming off a national title? You lost the battle, but you won the war. 888-710-4ISN. Okay, let's get to some nicknames.
64 nicknames were entered, but only one will win. It's Maggie and Perloff's search for the greatest nickname in sports.
All right, guys, excited to open up more voting for you today. We've got some brand new matchups for you, so let's get to it. And again, you can vote at Maggie and Pearl on X. That's where all the polls are up. You can see all of the bracket on Instagram and Facebook as well. So in the Tough Guys and Enforcers region, the one seed, Pearl, is Mean Joe Green.
Is there a better name than Mean Joe Green? I mean, that name just flows. And I ask kids about that, and I say, Mean? And they say, Joe Green.
He asked me one time, he said, Andy, why do they call me Mean? And I said, because you're mean.
Cute. That was Franco Harris and Andy Russell talking about Mean Joe Green. He's the one seed in this region. Takes on the eighth seed, the big unit, Randy Johnson. We move on. Tough battle here. The fifth seed in this region is Walter Payton, of course, known as Sweetness, against the four seed, Iron Mike Tyson.
Introducing the undefeated, undisputed heavyweight champion of the world, the one and only Iron Mike Tyson.
With the great Jimmy Lennon right there with the intro. The 11th seed in this region is the Rocket, Roger Clemens, Pearl, who's up against the three seed, Dale Earnhardt, the Intimidator.
Dale, just between you and me, you find Earnhardt, you know, intimidating?
Well, he's pretty darn competitive.
Nobody trades paint like Dale.
He does have that black Monte Carlo.
Yeah, he's got that black Monte Carlo.
But remember one thing. When he first started, his car was pink.
No, pink?
Pink? Pink. And he's never gotten over it.
Fun Chevy commercial from back in the day. The seventh seed in this region is Smokin' Joe Frazier, and he takes on the two seed. Reggie White, of course, is the Minister of Defense.
Mike Holmgren was preparing for his second year as the head coach in Green Bay when he had an epiphany about the player known as the Minister of Defense.
You know, Reggie's very devout. He was a Baptist, ordained Baptist minister. So on a whim, I just phoned him up. And I left a message on his answering machine. Reggie, this is God. I want you to play in Green Bay. And then I hung up the phone. Fortunately, he has a great sense of humor.
That's funny. Mike Holmgren telling that story about Reggie White. So there you go. Voting is open now in the Tough Guys and Enforcers region.
I got a favorite here. That I haven't been reading these polls right, but Sweetness, Walter Payton.
Fifth seed.
Yeah, I think he has a shot to get out of this bracket. I mean, Sweetness, it's pretty good.
But against Iron Mike Tyson?
Well, I don't like the nicknames where you have to say the person's full name, like Cameron, Hank Aaron, Iron Mike Tyson. That's not my style nickname.
Not your style, or you think that's there's something that's weird easy. About it?
No, it's just easy. Like,
but what about Mean Joe Green? You like that?
Nah, I like it where it's one name, like the Intimidator. I'm going to vote for the single names, the Minister of Defense, Sweetness, the Big Unit. I'll even put that over. Big Unit. I don't like having the nickname's so good, you don't need the person's name in there, and you know exactly who we're talking about.
I'm actually going to be very interested about Mean Joe Green versus the Big Unit.
That old debate. I mean, listen, we've been going over this for years.
Basically the Jordan LeBron of sports nickname debates. Okay. Beyond that, we have some results for you as well. So anyway, you can go vote at Maggie and Pearl on X for the Tough Guys and Enforcers region. That is now live for you. As far as some results from yesterday, the Hoops and Handles region, it's just crazy. Michael Jordan, Air Jordan, of course, not even close against the Greek Freak. 81% of the vote to 19% of the vote. The Black Mamba, Kobe Bryant, easily moves on, Pearl, taking out the logo, Jerry West.
Now we get to see the Black Mamba against Air Jordan, the battle we've all been waiting for. Oh my God, it's exciting.
Okay, we got something, a very interesting thing about the Black Mamba, but hold on, let me read these other two results and we'll get back to Kobe in a minute. The sixth seed in the Hoops and Handles region, sad to wave goodbye to the Iceman. George Gervin goes home, Pistol Pete Maravich moves on. And finally, Magic Johnson with an easy victory over Allen Iverson.
His name is Magic Johnson.
What's that about?
We're talking about practice.
81-19, like AI to get any love here?
So those are just some of the results from yesterday. We've got more for you. But can I pause for a second on the Black Mamba?
Okay. Sure. Yep.
Easily beat the logo. And it's kind of funny because you couldn't have had two more polar opposites when it comes to this particular matchup. Yeah, Kobe Bryant and Jerry West are both incredible Lakers. But Jerry West would never even confirm that he was the logo. Was very uncomfortable with the nickname, didn't want to be the logo. Jerry West was so humble. He didn't want that nickname. It was forced upon him, and we loved him. Kobe named himself the Black Mamba. Can you give yourself a nickname?
So I created the Black Mamba.
Yeah, he created the Black Mamba, which I think waters down the Black Mamba. And I would not, that's not just a Kobe thing. I think anyone who gives themselves their own nickname, Pearl, it's kind of weak.
It generally is, but I feel like Kobe's an exception to every rule because it's so cool that at the end of the day, and everybody, I mean, as far as mentality, there's no better player mentality wise than Kobe. So I give him a pass on this one.
But generally, when people create their own nicknames, it's kind of
it's like
frowned upon.
Is it like when you have a take and you call it the take of the year and you yourself say it multiple times, even though no one else had said it?
Well, I mean, it was trending in the right direction when I called 2025 the year of the drought buster.
Yes, and repeatedly said it's going to be taken. No, actually, you didn't even say it's going to be take a year. You already called itself. That was a self-proclaimed take of the year.
I didn't call myself the takesman of the year, though. That's from our former boss, Mike Exon.
Yeah. I think Kobe, you're right. You can't give yourself your own nickname, but Kobe can do it. For some reason, it makes it even cooler that he invented Black Mamba. It's like he came up with a alternate superhero. Matt, EJ, you're in the superhero world. Doesn't this sound like a superhero move?
Yes, that is true. I do feel like most superheroes is funnier or better when someone else gives them the name.
Okay.
I feel like most superheroes, like, they don't even give themselves a name. Like, they don't have a name. And then there's some stupid newspaper that comes up with a name. They're like, I don't even like that. And it sticks.
It's funny to call EJ in the superhero world. Like, he's got, what, a cape and a lair? Yeah. You're fighting crime? You just like superhero movies and comics.
No, I feel like he's a guy back at HQ who's helping the superhero, like, on the computer.
You want to be the guy in the chair?
Yeah, you're definitely. That's okay,
yeah,
right?
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you take none of the risk.
Yeah.
None of the risk, and you get none of the glory, but still.
But often at the very end of the movie, the bad guy comes for the guy in the chair.
That's the only thing.
They find
the lair, and they're like, oh, I'm screwed now.
Yeah.
They find the lair.
Yeah, they're always like, the guy in the chair is like, all right, well, the sirens are going off. He's like, I'm out of here. And then,
the hero will come save you.
Not always. Sometimes they get kidnapped, or sometimes they're just on the run. They're like, now they're working off a laptop, in
that
a Starbucks
superhero
somewhere.
Sucks.
Yeah.
Many times, I mean, Alfred has been in some hot water. Say that.
Batman's butler.
Oh, Alfie.
Well, listen, you get him started on this topic. I know superhero fans. But Kobe is a superhero, so I think he is so cool he can give himself. I don't hold it against Black Mamba. Honestly, if feels like people were inspired by Black Mamba. That's a funny thing. Air Jordan obviously is, started a movement. Like, we saw a movie called Air about him becoming Air Jordan. Black Mamba, I think, did too. I feel like Jason Tatum and Devin Booker and all the Kobe acolytes love that name, particularly.
They do. He still gave himself the nickname, so I think that violates some kind of unwritten code of nicknames. And secondly, a lot of the stuff, not a lot, there are very specific instances where Kobe used Black Mamba to tell stories that weren't true. And I would say that if he was here, may he rest in peace. I'd say it to his face. He's admitted the blackout workouts, they weren't even true. So I think I'm not saying that Kobe doesn't deserve to be treated with the respect that his career granted him. But for Devin Booker and for Jason Tatum and these guys who worshiped him like a god, some of those stories just weren't even true. It's based on a myth.
Yeah, but isn't all great basketball legends based on myths? I mean, that's the thing about that sport. Like, the Dr. J got a nickel off the top of the backboard and dunked. I have no problem with this. That's what sort of the basketball mythology is all about. I mean, Air Jordan is mostly myth at this point. In my mind, he hit every game-winning shot that was ever taken.
Did Wilt really score 100 points?
Well, that was... Oh, okay.
He did not.
Yeah, that's funny. Of course, every young person thinks everything is fake.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Richard in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wants to talk about the Black Mamba nickname, which is taking on, just beat out the logo in our nickname bracket. Now we'll face off against Air Jordan in the next round. Richard, what do you have, sir?
I called earlier today. I wasn't able to hold on to the phone because my boss lied about me. But, yeah, you can't be on that list if you nickname yourself. I mean, that's never heard of. Nobody else is nicknaming themselves on there. And real quick, just one more thing. You got to forget the greatest nickname, Bone Crusher Smith. I mean, that tops everything.
Wait, the boxer who got killed by Tyson?
Yeah.
He was really cool.
Well, yeah, but listen. Listen, we're talking about nicknames. Bone Crusher. One name for a loss is what you said, right? One name. I'll hang up and listen, guys.
Thank you, Richard.
We could have a separate category. I think we've talked about this. Guys whose names are just awesome because they're what was the linebacker's name? Stonebreaker or something? Guys who have names that sound like they're the sport. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Cam Hayward's dad was Ironhead, right?
What's that?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Guys with tough nicknames or tough guys, positions with good names.
Yeah, Ironhead was a nickname.
No, Ironhead's a nickname, I know.
There was a guy named Michael Stonebreaker.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misinterpreted you. You are talking about people whose given names,
yes,
whose legal names sound like they should only be playing sports. Like, I knew a kid named Steel DeVito.
Yes, names like that, exactly.
Is he the quarterback for the Giants?
I think related maybe to Tommy DeVito. They're both from New Jersey, but Steel DeVito, I can't imagine like being my CPA.
Stone Garrett was a Washington National. Well, something about the first name Stone. I don't know. It's just gnarly to me.
Although Stone Phillips was a famous TV broadcaster for many years, and that gave off like an air of, I don't know if that was his real name.
Yeah.
But
Michael Stonebreaker from Notre Dame was the guy I was thinking of. But yeah, I thought that's where that guy was going. Bone Crusher's a great name, but he was not that good of a boxer.
There was a Miami Dolphins running back, Storm Johnson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Who also was committed to the Miami Hurricanes, by the way, which was really cool for a hot second. Then he went to UCF.
But that's a totally different thing. That's like you're naming your kid like Adonis or something, you know, where you're foreshadowing some real great stuff.
What if that kid is ugly and you named an Adonis?
Okay.
What do you do?
Well, it's like if you name a little girl Bella, you know.
I got some other ones. Max Strong, a fullback. Yeah, that makes sense.
You need that. That's a great name.
Webster Slaughter, the wide receiver. Michael Stonebreaker. You have to. There are some cool names. Frank Gore. I don't think of that as a... Like he can gore you?
Oh, like a bull to a matador?
Yeah.
Auntie too.
Got any more?
Bronco Nagurski. Like if your name Quentin Jammer, a cornerback who jams a wide receiver.
That was a perfect one.
That's true.
This is good. Will Shields, who's an offensive lineman. Mike Quick, the wide receiver, who is now the color, and then DeBrickashaw Ferguson.
Oh, of course, former Jet.
Because he has creates a brick wall.
Yeah,
around.
Offensive lineman.
Yeah.
Yeah, they call him Brick.
Yeah,
Dub Brick.
What was it? By the way, I'm sorry to left her. What was the nickname we came up? Oh, Magatron. You didn't give that to yourself, so we can run with that. The Magatron.
I would have to apologize to Calvin Johnson if I ever met him.
How about Chase Claypool, Mapletron? He's a Canadian version of Calvin Johnson.
But was he?
Not really, but he signed somewhere. Magatron's awesome. Can we work this in here, guys?
A write-in?
I don't hate it.
888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. So again, the call to action here, you can now vote on the Tough Guys and Enforcers region. We're into the second round. Maggie and Perloff Show's quest to find the greatest sports nickname. All right, coming up, we've got some news for you out of Browns camp. Maggie and Perloff.
A vodka martini. How many olives would you like? 81.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. I should say the Magatron and Perloff Show.
It's not sticking.
Magatron sounds like something you'd find at Caltech, like something that has like some scientific purpose. Magatron. Megatron works a little better, I guess, because of the Transformers thing. But we're trying to come up with the perfect nickname. I said, what was your nickname earlier that we could go Mags?
Yeah, it didn't make the bracket.
Yeah,
and I wasn't a good enough athlete.
You must have had something. You don't need to be a good athlete to get a nickname.
No, I'm just saying to make this bracket.
Our field
of 64, we're trying to find the greatest sports nickname of all time. I was not a good enough nickname nor athlete to make this bracket.
Yeah, but you don't need to. I mean, everybody, that's why it resonates. We all have nicknames. We're all inspired, except for this show, for some reason, does not have good ones, except for me.
You didn't. You mean to tell me Mad Mags didn't show up on the tennis courts?
Mad Mags?
It's pretty good. It's not bad.
Nobody went with Bigfoot or Thumper or Squatch or Sasquatch.
I know, with my huge, gigantic feet that are so freakishly large. You know, funny enough, I was kind of able to hide them a little bit. No one really...
How? A tennis bag.
When just a solar eclipse.
When you were playing tennis, I mean, you could have footballed it from 8 feet behind the baseline.
It did. It was the biggest thing holding me back. Could have turned pro if not for my gigantic feet. But actually, I was thinking about my own sports career, which was very limited and not much to write home about. But when Tom Brady, who has a newsletter, apparently put out this big thing yesterday about how he had to turn his rivals into enemies. And Peyton Manning was one of the guys that he had to not just have a rivalry with, not just dislike, literally turn into an enemy, Pearl. I don't know if you saw this yesterday.
Yeah.
That resonated with me probably a little bit more than I care to admit. I thought of the other girls I was playing tennis against like that. I had to conjure that. It didn't work as well as Tom Brady's career worked, obviously. But I did look at them more like enemies than rivals. I was not friends with these other girls. We wouldn't speak to each other. It was like a pretty bad environment, quite frankly, and didn't make the team that fun. But I did not see them as friends. We were on the same team, but we were rivals and enemies.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Mad Mags in the house. So I played tennis in 7th and 8th grade and part of 9th grade.
Yeah.
And we were on the team, and man, did we have fun together. We were the exact opposite. You can't, tennis, once you play the playing match, you weren't good friends with everybody on the tennis court?
No, we weren't friends. And I wonder if we could have done better as a team if maybe we had been friends. But there's no teamwork, unless you're on a doubles team. Well, but there's no teamwork here. You're only playing your opponent. And I was looking at everyone else on my own team also as competition. Like, Tom Brady didn't look at his teammates that way, but he looked at his rivals that
way. Yeah, apparently. I mean, maybe we should all be watching our back here.
That's what I'm
Mad Mags, like, what is going on here? After you play your match, if you've never been to a tent, you go over and you cheer for your teammates. Like, once you're done, you have to go support. Like, hey, go get them, whatever. No? Isn't that how your team works?
Do you compartmentalize that, though? Because I feel like, because to me, like, I feel like, you know, in the various times I've been a bench player for teams I've played for, practices, the starters were my enemies. Now, when we had games, I was rooting for them like anybody because I want my team to win and they're my friends. But in practice, it's like I'm playing against the starting point guard. I'm trying to destroy him.
So this is what Tom Brady said.
Not working.
But. He wrote this on TomBrady.com. Stuff about our sports careers. How about the GOAT? He says, when I look back on my relationship with Peyton Manning, respect, admiration, appreciation for him as a competitor has grown with each passing year. It was always there, but while we were competing against each other, I couldn't let that get in the way of the fact that he was my enemy, that he didn't respect me, that he thought he was better than me because he was the number one pick from an SEC school, or at least that's what I made myself believe. Convincing myself that those things were true created a sense of urgency with me to prove him wrong. It goes on and on and on.
Two distinctions. One, you notice, A, we're talking about Tom Brady, the GOAT. Secondly, he talked about the guy on the other team.
Right. No, I understand that.
I understand the format of tennis, but still, that's a kind of a strange analogy. So when you were playing these people, like, did you imagine that they had slighted you in some way?
No, I just looked at them as they were coming for something that was mine, that I was defending, right? Like, I wanted to have my spot on the team and that everyone around me was kind of an enemy. And I'm curious because that was just sort of my thing. You know, when you're talking about team sports and the other team is the enemy, and Bogish is a coach for his kids' Little League and stuff like that, if the coach was instilling this Tom Brady, who we all admire, Tom Brady, and Michael Jordan had shades of this too, right? If a coach is instilling that in your kid, are you happy with that? Hey, the other team's your enemy. Your rival's your enemy. Do you co-sign off of it? Because I'd be a hypocrite if I said I didn't, because I was like that myself. I wouldn't necessarily teach it to younger kids.
I mean, listen, if I was a coach, I'd be like, that's your friend on the other side. Like, you know, give him a hug. No, of course you co-sign. What, this is basic athletics 101. What, is there anyone who doesn't think that way?
Well, Bogus, you actually coach. Do you teach your kids to look at the other teams as the enemy?
I think the more important lesson in there is that
that only matters during the game. Before the game and after the game, you have to turn it off. Like, you don't get to dislike them always because you're playing against them. Like,
I know, can I bring up a counterpoint there?
Yeah.
If you want to be a good athlete, what do you have to do? You got to practice and you got to work hard at it. So what's going to get you out of bed, off the couch, off your phone to go there and practice? You got to be motivated. And some people are motivated by their own motivation. Other people are motivated to say, hey, my opponent could be at the gym right now, and so I've got to get up and get myself to the gym.
I meant more on like actual interactions, like, you know, whether it's like a town to town or a school to school rivalry. Like, I think there's a time and a place to be like, we hate East High School.
Right.
It's not all the time, and it's not in every single situation. Like, you should be focused and intense during the game. But when the game is over, then that stuff has to, like, you have to exhale that stuff as well.
Yeah, and it can be tricky dealing with, you know, kids, like, because sometimes they don't know the difference between the game and after the game.
But do you think Tom Brady turned it off? Like, when he's saying that he looked at Peyton Manning as his enemy and that he had to do that, like, to stoke these competitive juices or whatever, I mean, off the court, you think, or off the field, do you think they were really chummy, or do you think he was always holding a little bit back? He says now they're good friends.
Well, I think he was able to turn it off when he was asked, hey, what do you think about Peyton Manning this week? He said, oh, you know, that Peyton Manning's a great player, and I love what he's doing over there in Indy.
Okay, so he can lie in a press conference.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's where you turn it off. Where, like, if he wanted to treat him like his enemy the whole time, he'd be like, oh, that scumbag. I can't wait to knock his block off.
But what do you think he said the week of with teammates?
Oh, yeah, you're saying that.
Yeah, you're bad-mouthing him.
Right. Yeah, I'm going to kill him. Yeah, which is what he should be saying.
Yeah, but if, like, they're you know, walking down a hallway in opposite directions, you should say hello, not ignore him and do, like, a shoulder bump and keep going.
Well, funny thing is, in the NBA, in the NBA, they're all best friends now, too.
Yeah.
They all came up
at
AAU together. Yeah, I know, but it's like basketball. I think when you fight all game and afterwards, like, the best players are, like, kind of bond over that in a way.
Well, you talk about your favorite, Kobe Bryant, the Black Mamba.
But he was an exception to the rule, I think. I don't think a lot of players. Jordan did not operate like Kobe. Like, Jordan, because he was so much better, he didn't have to do any of that. He was good friends with everybody.
Yeah. Well, Jordan used that also as like Pat Riley thought it was like a mind game.
Yeah, you know, he was definitely using that person.
Like, oh, Patrick Ewing, my little buddy over here. And then he cut your throat. Same thing with Charles
Barkley.
He did to
Reggie early in his career, too.
I think Bill Russell used to do that to Chamberlain, too, right? He would invite him over and stuff like that, try to soften him up.
There's a scene in that show about the Lakers winning time where Dr. J gets Magic drunk earlier in the show to try and soften him up. Yeah, but no, I don't know. This Tom Brady, obviously Tom Brady and Kobe Bryant are exceptions. They're like 100. They're insane in the best possible way. But I don't think the reality works like that. Like, listen, when we were in high school and there was the best player on our team and the best player on our team, on the other team, like, they might have fought really hard, but you know, like, oh, those guys are bonding after the games. They're probably going to go off to Villanova together. Basketball has an AAU culture behind it, too, that it's now
different. That's true, too. A lot of these guys have played together or are playing together if you're in high school, sometimes playing together literally at the same time as they're competing.
Yeah.
Emphatic head nod.
If you ever look behind the scenes in the NBA, they are all super tight. It's like, wait, how did they know each other so well? There's very few people who aren't exceptionally close, I think. And LeBron is friends with everyone. LeBron not friends?
You're right. I mean, I see it every time that I do. I cover high school sports, high school basketball. And I mean, all these guys play AAU in the New York City area. And, you know, after the game, they're all dapping each other up because they've been playing hoops for so long.
They're more loyal to their AAU friends, to their high school team. Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. For
sure. Does that get you recruited?
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I mean,
I just think that's also been used as people saying sports isn't like it used to be.
Definitely.
And there used to be real rivalries, and guys used to have legit bad blood with each other and beef, like Isaiah and Jordan, and, you know, even Larry Bird and Jordan. There could be respect there, but Larry was not friendly. Jordan was not friendly.
Yeah.
I think there were real rivalries, you know, and now it's not like that.
Did LeBron kill it, maybe? Maybe it was LeBron.
Can't blame him for that.
Well, I'm just saying, you're right. The SGA, well, who on earth would be rival? Joker? Giannis?
You know who I think could be the next rivalry in basketball?
Angel
Canadians Reason. Versus Americans.
Oh.
That's brewing a little bit.
I know it's happened in hockey.
It was great in hockey. The Four Nations Cup was dynamite.
I can't see that.
You remember when Dylan Brooks and Draymond had their spat? What was one of the things Draymond mentioned? I'm a gold medalist, and you guys in Canada will never win a gold medal.
Yeah, but you're picking the craziest individual in the entire country for both countries.
I know, but I'm just saying, those guys can lead the charge, especially if Canada.
Nobody's following Dylan Brooks.
No, but people are following Shea Gildas-Alexander. So I'm saying, if that becomes a thing, that I think that's our only shot.
Don't forget,
is making it a country thing.
Can you imagine our two biggest exports here, Draymond Green? Let's all follow the ways of Draymond. He's adjusted.
Our two diplomats, Draymond Green from U.S. and Dylan Brooks from Canada.
The Draymond Green show with Baron Davis must go on.
Those tariffs are staying if those two guys leave negotiations.
Yeah, they're escalated.
Yeah, it's really going to be a war between Jamal Murray and I don't even know.
Combination.
Yeah.
Jaylen Brown.
Yeah, it's hard. No, this is not happening. The Canadians, I don't know how they got all that hockey animosity. They're so nice, right?
It's all right below the surface. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Bogues, want to hang? We've been so busy talking about whether or not you should be enemies with your rivals or just rivals. So much to do, including we will tell you who is in danger of having the biggest drop-off this college football season. Maggie and Pearl. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, across the country on the Infinity Sports Network. Andrew Bogish has headlines for us, and then we'll get to the college football team that we think will suffer a drop-off. What's up, folks?
Co-workers, last night did not begin well for Shohei Ohtani.
The 0-1 pitch is swung on and hit a ton. Byron Buxton unloads. Hello, Ohtani. That ball is gone, and Byron Buxton has done it again. 1-0 Minnesota Twins. First home run allowed this year by Shohei Ohtani.
On the second pitch he threw at Dodger Stadium last night, but the Twins didn't score again. Only two more hits over three against Ohtani, and he put the Dodgers ahead for good on his own.
The 2-1, and Ohtani blasts it, tosses the bat. That ball is way gone toward the batter's eye. We got a unicorn sighting in Los Angeles.
Steven Nelson on Dodgers Radio. LA a 5-2 win over the Twins to snap a six-game home skid. The bad news is closer Tanner Scott left in the ninth inning with a stinging sensation in his left forearm.
Oh, no.
He is headed for an MRI.
So I feel like all the Shohei should go pitch and hit guys here in the studio are going to use last night as a singular piece of evidence is why. But let's face it, since Shohei started pitching, the team stinks. They can't hit at all because Shohei is not leading the way. So I'm sticking to my, you should just make Shohei a hitter. I don't think that they need to disrupt all that at all. Because they've been terrible, right, for the last month. They haven't couldn't hit the side of a barn. I think Shohei's got to hit and be the best hitter in baseball. So I don't think that the occasional start really moves the needle the way you guys do.
Okay, but it can't be all Shohei's fault that everyone's not hitting. It's baseball. They're professionals.
Yeah, baseball is. Once you see your best hitter not hit, it's contagious.
It's a team of all stars.
That's baseball.
No, that's not baseball. Everyone on this team, it was the NL All-Star team, was the Dodgers.
So you're saying it's pure coincidence that they started moving Shohei to pitching and the whole team forgot how to hit? I don't know, because you're not as scared of Shohei anymore. His numbers are dipping. Although last night, apparently, he was awesome.
He has three home runs and seven RBIs in over his last three games.
Also, maybe you give him a minute. Like, maybe, you know, this little small swoon he was in, like, he'll get back hot again and then the Dodgers will be fine.
Well, I don't know. I'm going by what Smoltz said during the All-Star game. Like, it's definitely going to affect his hitting if he's pitching. Like, and he said throughout his career, the numbers have dipped when he pitches.
Okay, but what about what he can add to the team if he's pitching in the postseason?
I understand, but a day-to-day basis, is he really going to be, as a, you know, a starter, is he going to be able to make the same impact if he's not hitting the same way in every game? It's just it's pure math. You play four games as a hitter, just one as a pitcher.
But they
won a World Series with a bullpen game.
They also won the World Series with him being hobbled, so they didn't need his bat as much either.
Yeah, that's true.
So
the Brewers blanked the Mariners last night 6-0 for an 11-game win streak. The Giant losing streak is 6 after a 9-5 final in Atlanta. Salvador Perez, 2 homers, 4 RBI. The Royals roughed up the Cubs at Wrigley 12-4. And the Cardinals won in Colorado 6-2. That is loss number 76 in game 100 for the Rockies.
Is that bad?
The Chargers are reportedly signing running back and returner Nyheim Hines, who hasn't played a game in 2 seasons. Hines, when he was a Bill, suffered a torn left ACL 2 Julys ago when he was hit by a personal watercraft.
Right.
That's a jet ski, right?
I mean, think it was,
okay.
Yes.
He spent last season with the Browns, but was never healthy enough to play before being released in February.
Did we have him on the show, Maggie?
I think so.
He was really cool. I'm rooting for Nyheim Hines. I did not know he was taken out by a jet ski. This is news to me. But let's go. Team Hines. No? Anybody?
I mean, the Bills traded for him and gave him some money, and then unfortunately he got hurt.
Oh, he'll never win Maggie back.
No, actually,
didn't do enough.
Actually, he is responsible for a really amazing Bills highlight, if I'm remembering this correctly. Right after the DeMar Hamlin game, he returned 2 touchdowns
yes.
to the house
yep.
against
yes.
the New England Patriots. And by the way, they needed those to beat the Patriots that day. That was when Belichick was still the coach, obviously. He has a major place in.
All right.
Well, he has a place in Bills lore for sure. Great call by Jim Nance that day too. I'm sure Tony Romo stepped on it, but
go Bills.
Said something like it's fate.
I've already forgotten who did he sign with again.
Chargers.
Got it. Let's go.
Chris Paul returning to the Clippers for his 21st and likely last NBA season. CP3 has already played 6 seasons for LA, making 5 All-Star games and becoming the franchise leader in assists.
Pretty damn cool!
And the Fever have officially ruled out Caitlin Clark for tonight's game with the Liberty because of that new right groin strain. New York is getting back Jonquel Jones, who's been out since mid-June with an ankle issue. Mags, back to you.
WNBA Great. Finals back on.
Bogus, thank you. All right, the college football team, Pearl, that you think is going to have the biggest fall off this year. Would you like me to go first?
Good. No, please go first.
So I'm circling Tennessee here, the Volunteers, and it was only a couple weeks ago, months ago, mm-hmm. feels like not that long ago, that there was a switcheroo with quarterbacks between UCLA and Tennessee because Nico Iamaliava, they were expected to come back. Had an NIL issue. So he's off to UCLA. Now Joey Aguilar, who never even took a snap for UCLA, but was from Appalachian State, now in for Tennessee. And they finished the season last year, Pearl, ranked 9th in the AP poll. Obviously, they made the college football playoff. They went to Ohio State. It went poorly there. Their schedule is tough because it's the SEC, so of course it's tough. It's not insane. It's not insane. They do have to, you know, obviously Georgia, they're going to play, of course, Alabama. Like, they have a lot of tough ones on the schedule. Avoid LSU this year, but I don't know. I don't think they're making the college football playoff, and I think that would represent a fall off. What do you have?
Yeah, I mean, I have a little faith in Josh Heupel as a good coach, but I'll go personal here. I'm throwing a shot. Miami Hurricanes, and I'll tell you one reason why. His name is Carson Beck. I do not love this guy, and their schedule is a lot harder than last year when they should have made the playoff. I will give you that. Last year was ridiculous not to put Cam Ward in, but come on. Carson Beck in all these big games, you don't think he's going to fold? And I turned to Hurricane fan EJ. I'm nervous about the Canes.
So is EJ.
Why are you doing this to me?
EJ is not sold on Carson Beck either. Not to speak for you, EJ, but you're not waving the pom-poms for Beck. And
no.
He's still hurt.
Yeah. I mean, well, we'll see. Hopefully he'll be ready for camp. I mean, but the schedule, they played Florida last year and they won. They have Notre Dame this year, so it makes it harder. But I think the ACC schedule actually turned out to be okay. They still don't got Clemson.
But they have SMU is still really good, too.
Yeah, a lot of former Miami guys on there, so that should be a fun game. I think Miami would be fine. I'm not too concerned. They won 10 games last year. I think they're probably hovering around 9-10 this year.
I mean, they're loaded except for quarterback. It's a safe bet to go against Carson Beck right now.
Interesting season opener, Sunday, August 31st, against Notre Dame. That's cool.
Massive game.
A little history there, too, which is really cool. Catholics versus convicts, if everyone remembers that. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Coming up, Jerry Jones in his full glory yesterday.